Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 78 of the Last Round Podcast, once again in quarantine mode here, stuck inside, even though it seems like they're opening, at least over here in California, they're opening some things, at least starting this week. I don't know if it's because a bunch of lawsuits and protests, I don't know, but some things are changing. But obviously we're talking combat sports here. Talking boxing here on the Last Round. You know, once again, I'm Danny Z with my co-host, Michael Shepherd. And whether you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, Boxing Socials, YouTube, what have you, we appreciate it. But this week, we got another round of guests here. Well, not guests. I didn't say plural, did I? I think I messed up. Whatever. I don't know. I've known him, what? When did we first meet? At 2014, maybe?
Yeah.
Just about?
Sports. Yeah.
Yeah, so he was my first.
No longer with us.
he's rest in peace.
Yeah.
He was my my first colleague, technically my first editor in the journalism game here. Like he said, we met at page2sports.com, now defunct, but you know, we ran the MMA and boxing coverage there, which was pretty cool for a while.
Yeah.
And
excellent for a while.
Yeah, we did pretty well. We had a pretty good run there. But Ed, obviously, is still, you know, every time I talk about MMA, I always go to him to verify stuff because, you know, this guy's a black belt in what, jiu-jitsu?
Brazilian jiu-jitsu, brown belt in Ishinryu karate. And I cover mixed martial arts for MMAnews.com, MyMMAnews.com, SureDog.com, and I just started at 1:37 p.m., which is one of Gary V's properties, if you know who Gary Vaynerchuk is.
Yeah, we talked about him, I think, a few days ago when we were mm-hmm. talking on the phone. So we got Ed on here this week as one of our resident MMA reporters. You know, he's been in the MMA world, not just practicing the sport, but also, you know, covering the sport from a journalistic standpoint for quite a few years now. So we want to talk about, like, you know, the state of combat sports in this COVID-19 era right now, especially since UFC has an event this upcoming weekend in Florida, which, of course, we'll touch on. So obviously, you know, we're just here to talk some boxing. But like we mentioned, let's just go right into it. UFC is the first, right? Besides that Guatemalan boxing fight, right, Mike, that happened last week. I think UFC is the first, you know, combat sport or first major event, at least here in the States, to hold an event this Saturday, right?
Nicaragua.
Yeah, that or was it? Yeah, that boxing fight. Yeah, but the UFC is in Jacksonville, right, Ed?
Yeah, Florida, the only state that has deemed sports as an essential business. So, the
Thank
UFC.
Thank you, Florida.
Yeah. I mean, so what do you guys think? Do you think Florida, we had, I told Daniel about it 2 weeks ago on the podcast I co-host, we had a ringside physician, Dr. John Lucas. He's a South Carolina ringside physician. He does boxing and MMA. And, so we had him on, and before they had announced the whole thing, with UFC's booking in Florida, it was already deemed essential business. And we were just spitballing if Florida would become the new fight capital, at least in the United States. So, I mean, do you guys see that as something that's happening? I mean, has any events broken that I haven't seen pop up as far as, like, boxing making a return?
Mike?
Want me to go?
Yeah, please.
I think it'll depend on probably what happens this weekend. Obviously, if this goes, you know, forward with nothing happening in the coming weeks, I think what will affect it is if, you know, they do the UFC 249 again on Wednesday and again on Saturday, I think it's scheduled. and then a couple of weeks down the line, somebody that was at the event tests positive, then I'm sure all the news media are going to jump all over that and blame Dana White. And, you know, some of the boxing events may put things on the back burner, but if nothing comes up and no one tests positive, I think this will probably be the way to go because, you know, like soccer in the UK and, you know, UFC and boxing, they have dates and contracts they have to try to fulfill. So I think they're going to try all the means they can to try and get something, some kind of content to fulfill those dates they have with ESPN and Fox, DAZN. So hopefully.
You're right. Yeah, I agree with that. And I also, you know, in terms of other promotions, not just MMA promotions, but like, you know, like a Bob Arum, an Oscar De La Hoya, combat sports. I think they're all going to be watching. They're monitoring the situation this whole week right now, is up until, you know, the 11th hour on Saturday. Because if they see that UFC gets through the event and puts it on without, you know, any issues, you know, there's all, they will have some bad PR regardless, you know, because of what's going on. But if it's not really that bad, the backlash isn't as bad as they think, then I think like how Mike kind of touched, and then you'll kind of start seeing Top Rank, Golden Boy Promotions, PBC, and then, you know, maybe even Bellator really start ramping up. Like, okay, Dana White, UFC did it, so I think we're safe to do it now. We can follow their lead. So I think in a sense, they're probably glad that Dana White's kind of taking the lead here, because they're just like, well, if he gets heat for it, that's him. Like, but at least that kind of gives us a measuring stick. What do you think, Ed?
I don't know. I mean, there's two sides to it. Obviously, there's a side that it's like, okay, yes, we want sports to come back. I mean, I'm listening to Dana White speak about it when he was spoke with it was last week when he spoke with Brett Okamoto over at ESPN, and he said, you know, we can't. One of the things that he said that stuck with me was we can't sit and do nothing. We can't cower at home. Someone's got to try something. So when he said that, I kind of was like, I agree with that. But then obviously there's the flip side where caution, concern, fighter safety, health issues, spreading the damn thing is also a concern too. So in that respect, I'm like, yes, it's better to wait. You mentioned Bellator. Bellator is waiting till July. We were talking before we started recording that Bob Arum is also talking about July with Top Rank. The funny thing about him is, you know, he's knocking Dana White for trying this, but like a week before that, I could do some boxing coverage, as Daniel knows, Mike. I like for the bigger fights, MMAnews.com likes to have some boxing coverage there, and they usually tap me to do it because they know I've had experience from my days working with Daniel. And the last thing I wrote about was that Top Rank and Bob Arum were actually talking about using the UFC Apex in Vegas as one of the potential locations to feature closed off events. But then, you know, it seems like it's like he loves them 1 week and the next week he hates him. So I don't know if that's because he's old, because he's been a promoter for longer than probably we've been alive. So I don't know where that's coming from, but I mean, I don't know if you guys had a take on who from Top Rank, DAZN, Eddie Hearn, Matchroom Boxing. You know, when you're looking at the big promoters, Golden Boy, what do you think? Who do you think has the best plan to come back? And is it all July that they're looking at too, just like Bellator?
Those skinhead white guys, as Bob Arum likes to say. I think, I know, listening to Robert Smith from the British Board of Boxing Association in the UK, they're not going to be doing any shows until the NHS, which is the National Health Service, is not under so much pressure, because they don't want to take away, you know, doctors, nurses, and have beds available for boxing shows. So I think Eddie Hearn, with his UK events, is going to be, you know, kind of on hold until the government, the NHS, and, you know, the British Board of Boxing give them the green light to go ahead. Over here, I think we'll probably see some more events, depending on how the UFC goes ahead. You know, if that goes ahead, no flags, no injuries, nothing happens, I think everyone will kind of follow suit. You know, even Bob Arum, you know, may have to give some praise to Dana White, since he's the guy that's kind of setting the trend. So,
no, you're right. Yeah. And I mean, Ed obviously might know a little bit more about the intricate details about the event on this weekend. But we were, you know, as we were looking at it, Mike had told me right before that the UFC, you know, they're obviously going to test their fighters for the COVID-19 virus and everything, but that they're that there's no information to state how many times the athlete will be tested, how long it will take for the results. I mean, if they tested him already, I mean, Ed, you know, you being, you know, in within the MMA community, you know, can you speak on the details behind the testing process for this event?
I mean, it's funny that you're asking because those details keep on trickling out since yesterday. MMA Junkie actually has a really good piece as far as because some you know, sources are telling them, let me just read you a quote that I saved for coming on here. The UFC medical team administers a COVID-19 test, and then the UFC PI performance dietitian will also conduct a fight week screen that includes but isn't limited to weight and nutritional status, food allergies or intolerances, and weight cut practices. So one of the things that are coming out of that, I mean, obviously they're getting COVID-19 tests, goes back to something, Mike, that you just said a little while ago. You know, those tests here in Jersey, there's a bouncer friend of mine when this whole thing started. He got sick, got really sick, wanted to get the test. By the time he got the test and then got the results, he was already feeling better. And I mean, I'm not going to quote him directly because he cursed, but he was like, we drop F bombs here in Jersey, like the way Smurf say Smurf. So he was like, it's harder. He was like, it's harder to get the damn test than it was to get the virus. So with that in mind, again, like Mike said, if these tests are so hard to get, why is it that the UFC is able to get tests for a sporting event? And I know it happened earlier too when they were canceling NBA and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it sucks to say, but it's like, you know, Mike's making the money symbol, but I mean that money talks no matter what's going on, pandemic or not.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. I mean, you know, whether people, you know, get irritated at that opinion or not. I mean, you know, I think, you know, Ed, like you said, it's justifiable to question like why, you know, a sporting event or a UFC can get, you know, tests, especially with the shortage or what they've been saying, you know, what they've been reporting. But like Mike, just, you know, visually, if you're not watching on video, you know, listening to the audio version of this podcast, Mike was doing like the money sign. So that's true.
They can't see that on the podcast.
They can't. You know, they can imagine it. But yeah, you know, it comes down to money, power, you know. I mean, WME owns the UFC, right, Ed? So
yeah, now called Endeavor, but yeah, and I think they got downgraded to a bad, Moody's just downgraded them to like a risky investment or something like that.
Oh wow.
So there's definitely some pressure financially to start moving something along, cuz 2019 was the UFC's most profitable. I think they made over $900 million, yeah, something like that.
Right.
And then with apparently in Endeavor, you know, buying the UFC put them in a hole. It's $4 billion purchase that they made. So it looks like they want to try to make some of that back. And the thing is, Dana White and the UFC is winning. Doesn't matter what's happening with Endeavor. You know, they're still getting like if they fulfill their end of the contract, ESPN, Disney is paying them for their events. So they have to put on the events to make money, which I guess that's why Dana White wants to move forward. I mean, outside of the fact that he's just a maniac that, you know, doesn't sleep much or whatever, he's always trying to do something. There's a UFC event every weekend, but there's people that are all like obviously for this, you know, going forward, like you said. People want to watch and see what happens, and you know, good stuff, bad stuff. So then it'll give them an idea, and that's something Dr. Lucas hinted at on the podcast I did with him. But I feel like, you know, something Bob Arum said was like they wanted to watch the NBA and the NFL to see to see how they handle things, and then copy from them. I mean, if you're going to try to be like these big leagues, which the UFC and Dana White have said they want to try to be like, then you know, why not play it safe like them and do that? I mean, despite the fact that they don't have any unions or, you know, the Ali Act doesn't extend to mixed martial arts or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, like Mike was hinting at, I mean, it's definitely money talking overall. But do you guys have any, are there any like boxing, like the feedback you get from the boxing community as far as sitting back? I mean, how's boxing taking it overall? Because I feel like I don't see enough comments from them.
I think most people kind of want something to watch, you know, selfishly as a fan or as, you know, a media. And obviously the guys that actually get paid to work in the media, I'm sure they want events to go ahead. But at the same time, I think it's just, unfortunately, the way the world is people will be sitting back hoping Dana White fails so they can jump on that and give him, you know, shit, essentially, for being like, you know, you're a tyrant, you just went ahead when people didn't want you to. But at the same time, people still want to watch it. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see really what happens. And, you know, I'm intrigued to see, are they going to go ahead with the way that Nicaragua did it the other way? Are we going to have people getting sprayed and, you know, desanitized inside the ring like they were doing? Are they going to have, you know, everybody wearing a mask eventually? Are they going to have, what was it, like one person in the crowd every kind of like three or four seats? And then obviously kind of like a square around them where people couldn't sit right behind. They had to sit two or three seats behind. You know, is that going to be, you know, towards the end of the year? Is that how all boxing shows are going to be? So it's going to be interesting.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, we talk about UFC obviously putting on the event, but I mean, we all know, like, the professional wrestling, WWE has been doing it for weeks now, right there in
AEW too. Yeah.
Right. So they've been putting on their events for quite several weeks now since this whole pandemic began. And like, yeah, they're not, you know, boxing, they're not MMA, you know, it's not physical, you know, annihilation like ours is, but it is physical contact. They are, you know, doing these moves and jumping off the ropes and, you know, their bodily fluids exchanging, sweat and all that stuff. So, you know, in terms of the contact, it's obviously still there. So, I mean, do you guys think that maybe Dana White or even Bob Arum? I think Bob Arum was asked in an interview, like, you know, if about the WWE and about them putting on events. Do you think obviously Vince McMahon, you know, kind of gave somebody like a Dana White a little bit more confidence to go to Florida and put on their event because they see, well, we see WWE doing it, so let's just follow their lead too.
Well, I mean, MMA has always had the it's always kind of like a weird, like they can never get escape far enough away from professional wrestling for as far as comparisons and stuff. So, you know, I mean, actually pro wrestlers have a long history of crossing over into the sport because the history of, I mean, I can go on about the connections between submission grappling and catch wrestling and how that turned into pro wrestling. That could be a whole other podcast in itself, but you know, so like, it's nothing new as far as the crossover, but as far as like the marketing part of it and, you know, the scheme of it, it's something that mixed martial arts as a whole tries to get away from, but they never can. And this is definitely one of those moves that are, they're not going there. It's not going to get them far enough away from it. If anything, it'll bring them closer. As far as closed off events go, because MMA already had a few when this all started. Were there any boxing events that occurred? I know you were talking about someplace overseas, but have you guys watched any boxing events that were closed off? And if so, like, what was your opinion on them as far as, were they boring or did it seem distracted? The fighters seem distracted. How was it?
If I remember rightly, didn't Showtime have an event just as this kind of became kind of like a pandemic in the US? To me, I'm all for watching the events, you know, during this time, because essentially it's either that or nothing. But I think it's going to be kind of strange watching them. Even, you know, watching WWE, I watched part of WrestleMania and having no crowd, having no pop. And, you know, I think some of the fighters, you know, live off that adrenaline. Someone like Conor McGregor that plays up to the crowd and stuff like that, I can see, you know, that, you know, helps him, takes him to another level. You know, some of the, you know, the fighters that don't have that following and are kind of, you know, just get on with the job, I'm sure to them, you know, even being the bad guy or just being, you know, a middle of the card of rung fighter, it's not going to affect them having no crowd. But the bigger names, I think they feed off that. You know, that's why they're up there. That's why they're at the pinnacle of the sport. So I think to them and to being a fan, you're going to be able to hear absolutely everything, every punch. You're going to be able to hear the corner teams because the UFC already did a card like this in Brazil, right? When it first
started. Yeah. It was that first weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of, it's, to me as a fan, it is very different. But the time that we're in, it's that or nothing. So just, I'm going to have to suck it up and watch it. So.
Mm-hmm.
Ed, do you think that the UFC is making, you know, all the people that are going to work that event this weekend, do you think that Dana White or the UFC is making them sign like any type of waiver form in terms of like, yeah, do you think so?
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know. I mean, I know you guys said that you get the press releases and stuff. The first one that came out about that announced this card coming up, and along with the news of the other two that are going to, because they're doing Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. There's just one Saturday and then Wednesday and then on the 16th again, all in the same location. There was a link to apply if you wanted to cover the event.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, it looks like, I mean, I know I couldn't go because, I mean, this even though Florida is like allowing it, that they also have a restriction for folks coming from my area. I'm in New Jersey, which is number two in the whole country as far as cases and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I know they're making folks coming from New York and New Jersey quarantine anyway. So, you know, I wouldn't be able to go even if I can get to Florida. They would still quarantine me and the whole thing would pass me by. I was distracted when you were talking because we were just talking about this. I don't know if you can see it, Mike.
They changed 51. Yeah.
Oh, in Australia. Oh,
yeah. Wow. Remember you were saying cancel? Yeah. They changed it to postpone. We were just talking about.
So go ahead and, you know, just kind of describe to our listeners what you guys are talking about, just to kind of give them a brief overview.
Yeah, because it's been happening a lot. So if you looked at all these events, I mean, because everything happens getting pushed back. Or so if you use the word cancel, somebody contacts you and says, no, you're incorrect. You need to adjust your statement because it's not canceled. We're going to do it later. So everyone like UFC, Bellator, PFL, if you say canceled, they're saying that's not the case because we're going to try to make these up. Bellator, if they come back in July like they want to, they're going to try to pick up right when they left off. And I mean, if you guys want to hear it, I was supposed to be in Connecticut. It was declared a global pandemic March 11th. I was credentialed. I was in New York March 9th for the Bellator press conference that announced their whole spring summer schedule.
Oh, wow.
And then that Thursday, because the event Bellator 241 was on Friday the 13th. Why you would book anything on Friday the 13th, I don't know. But so that Thursday, I usually try to get there for everything. But because of the week was so weird, I was like, I'm not leaving until fight night. Like the day of the fight, I'll go and cover the event and
right.
I'll come home. And then as the day's progressing, folks that were already there are messaging me and saying like, you don't come here because it looks like it's not happening.
Right.
And then day of the event, Scott Coker pulled the plug and was like, nope, everybody go home. This isn't happening. It's too dangerous for everybody. So that's just how where we were. That was March 13th. March 12th was when I got the email. So March 13th. Man. Yeah.
You know, kind of going back to this weekend in terms of, you know, having obviously a combat sport event, a fighting event this Saturday. You know, Mike was mentioning, you know, before we started recording about sparring. You know, how is that going to affect like somebody who's on this card this Saturday or someone who's on the card next Wednesday, like you mentioned, like, you know, they're not able to get that legitimate, that, you know, good sparring, those good sparring partners. Maybe there's some sparring partners that said, yeah, you know, I'm still willing to go and train with you. And maybe they did get some sparring, but I mean, naturally you would think that these fighters, especially for this Saturday's event, didn't really get some good sparring in for these training camps. I mean, what, have you heard anything about that issue?
I think the biggest details came out when you look at Justin Gaethje, who got called in last minute for the initial booking for April 18th. So he's fighting Tony Ferguson for the lightweight title. He only got a couple of weeks notice to get ready for the first date on April 18th. So now that they're doing this do-over for this weekend, he got a couple more weeks to train in camp. And I forget the fighters. He's got he mentioned the fighter's name. I off the top of my head, I can't remember. But he's quarantined with teammates of his, training partners of his. And he's training with them to prepare. So that's a control group right there. You know, as long as they're not in contact, they're going to be in his corner. They've been quarantined in his house. He said that to on ESPN last week. I did a write-up about it over at MyMMAnews.com because that was one of the details that stuck out to me was just the fact that he got a couple of extra weeks. So maybe it's not so much short notice. Situations like that, I know boxing is different because generally boxers like to get sparring partners that are more kind of similar to the person they're going to face at that time. But in mixed martial arts, there's academy and like dojo team relations. So like, you know, those guys are always like, if you look at the gyms are known in the sport of mixed martial arts. I think it's the case in boxing now too, isn't it? Mm-hmm. There's guys that fight out of Mayweather boxing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So like Hard Knocks 365, American Top Team, stuff, gyms like that are well known. So if they're in the same location, a lot of them will train with each other. Whether or not that helps on fight night, this will be the first true event where we get to see that, because you can't count UFC Brazil, you can't count the Cage Warriors. There was over in the UK, there was a Cage Warriors event that went on with no fans, but they still had a regular camp before that got moved. So, this is going to be the first event where we see, are we going to get the true best of these guys, given what happened, especially watching Justin Gaethje and any other fights that got put together last minute. I think Donald Cerrone and Anthony Pettis, they headlined the ESPN broadcast portion, so you don't have to have an account or a pay-per-view for that one to see those guys are last minute. And Donald Cerrone, he's driving himself in his RV, a 22-hour drive, to get there on Thursday so he can weigh in Friday and then fight on Saturday. And he seems happy about it because the fight week media schedule, obviously they're not doing it because of everybody's got to stay put. So as far as to answer your question, I think we'll know the true answer when we see how these guys perform on Saturday.
Kind of 3 points to raise, one kind of for you, Ed, and then two for both of you. Mm-hmm. Do you know if the guys have been, paid a little bit extra, kind of some danger money? And then also, what do you think will happen when, say this is for boxing than MMA, but someone kind of gets pressured into fighting, they don't get that sparring, and then they lose, because in boxing, not so much in MMA, when someone's actually gets a loss on their record, it affects them quite a lot in terms of purse, in terms of the big fights they're going to get, in terms of following, because they've lost that thanks to Mayweather. Mm-hmm. And then also, do you know if anybody in the UFC has actually turned down the fights? Because, Dana White is kind of like a tyrant, really. If they turn down a fight and they're not a big name, they're not called Conor McGregor, he just casts them aside. Whereas, we've already heard from Top Rank that Teofimo Lopez has kind of said, I don't really want to fight Lomachenko behind closed doors. And, that won't really affect him.
Well, so there was a conference call with all the fighters, active fighters in like the next quarter that were scheduled to fight. It got leaked. I think it's either the Athletic or MMA Junkie. I'm pretty sure it was Junkie that got the quotes where Dana White, he wasn't so much of a tyrant as far as like he said, you don't have to fight if you don't want to. The original co-main event for UFC 249, the first booking was Rose Namajunas versus Jessica Andrade, I think was the co-main event. And Rose pulled out because she said, I don't want to do it. I'm not trying to fight during a pandemic. Amanda Nunes,
I think two of her family died.
She had deaths in her family. I don't know if they were COVID-19 related either, but the other thing too was
Amanda Nunes.
Oh yeah, she was the one that said she openly said, I'd rather not fight when there's a pandemic going on, you know? And it makes sense because going back to what we were talking about before, if you can't do your training camps the way you're used to doing them, then you know, why are you going to risk your ranking and your, you know, your spot, especially, I mean, not that the UFC rankings mean much these days, but, you know, because they really don't. But it's funny because there's more boxing guys that get to that have a say in the rankings in the UFC. You know what I mean? So it's like weird. It's weird that these rankings are there. But I mean, if you've watched the events and the events they want to put on, they really don't mean much. But I mean, I don't think Dana White is really mad at anybody if they're saying no. It's not like he's calling out of, you know, for a fight and they say yes, I want to. He actually said on Sunday, Yahoo Sports, he said if somebody doesn't want to fight, because Donald Cerrone said he'll fight the following Wednesday if he wins, and Dana White was like, with everything going on, no, you fight the fight you signed up for and then you go home, you know. So it's I don't think we're getting the standard Dana White during the pandemic.
did he sweeten the pot? Are people getting extra money?
Well, the funny thing, the question of hazard pay has come up and nobody has said anything. Usually afterward, the purses and stuff are disclosed, but you know, Dana White's been known to, I mean, if you've watched any of his interviews, he keeps saying we're going to take care of the guys. So I would imagine there's going to be some locker room bonuses or something for folks out there. I mean, it's a lot to ask, but the other thing is too, I mean, fighters, you guys have talked to enough boxers and stuff. I mean, you know, a lot of them are kind of like, I'll risk getting sick. This is what I dedicated my life to. You only have so much time to compete as a professional combat sports athlete. I mean, you know, it's not like other sports where you could do it. You know, you hit 35, 36 in your 40s, you need to start thinking about retirement. And that's not considered, you know, that's still considered a young man in regular human terms. But when you're looking at world-class athletes that hurt each other for a living, you know, time matters. Look at Kayla Harrison of the PFL. She flat out, she just won the PFL 2019 lightweight title. And then the PFL says, we're not going to do a 2020 season. And so she actually came out and said, if that means I have to leave the PFL and see if someone wants me at the UFC, then I have to do that. Wow. Because they're going forward and the place that I'm a champion in is not. So
there's only a small percentage, you know, who were in that Mayweather McGregor type of money that's life changing. The rest of them, even though they're on TV, the paycheck to paycheck like the rest of us.
Yeah, I mean, that's especially with when you compare, I mean, there's boxers out there that a lot of folks are like, I don't even know who that is, but they still make more money than UFC fighters.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, you know, I sat there and I watched the whole the Wilder Fury 2. I watched that whole event. And it was one of the smaller weight classes, the title fight that was on the main card.
Navarrete?
Yeah. Is that the one that he won, right?
The Mexican champion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People were like, come on, man, who are these guys? And I was just like, that's a champion. Like, I was like, I mean, Daniel laughs because he knows I don't buy pay-per-views. I go to bars to watch them.
Yeah.
And so I always have to, you know, deal with the crowd that's there.
You know, no, you're right. I mean, jumping on what Mike was saying about, you know, how a UFC fighter, you know, in terms of pay, some boxers, like you mentioned, some boxers who are lesser known get paid more than maybe a bigger star in the world in UFC. Adrian Broner today, just before we started recording this show, Adrian Broner posted on his social media pretty much complaining, saying, you know, why is it that like UFC fighters can get a bunch of L's, you know, a bunch of losses on their record, or one or two or three, and they're still big stars, they're still making a bunch of money. I mean, I'm sure he's referring to a Conor McGregor or something like that, or, you know, or just in general, but and then he says, like, and when a boxer gets a loss, you know, they throw us to the side and our pay goes down, you know. So right before we came on, I saw that. So when Mike was talking about that, it kind of popped into my head. I mean, Ed, you being on the MMA side, you know, how would you address Adrian Broner's question and his concerns right there?
Well, the thing is, he's not saying anything that it's funny. It's funny he brings that up. He's likely looking at, if you look at the UFC's matchmaking as of late, they're ready to have Jose Aldo fight Henry Cejudo for the bantamweight title. And Jose Aldo lost his last fight. I mean, you look at Aljamain Sterling, who probably should get a title shot, but they've completely overlooked him.
Dominic Cruz this weekend.
Dominic Cruz this weekend. I mean, he's coming back after a long layoff. I think he got injured when he lost that fight too, when he lost the title, but he's still getting a title shot. So that's probably where Adrian Broner's coming from, you know, but the thing of it is, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of these fighters market themselves very well. And I don't know, outside of the bigger names in boxing, you have to look at the way with social media. And I mean, it's a long time from HBO boxing, and we'll just be tuning in every Saturday and watching Roy Jones knock out some guy, you know what I mean, from back in the day. So it's like now, you know, with social media out there, these guys, a lot of guys are, look at Henry Cejudo. Henry Cejudo was already top ranked, and before he started doing this horrible, cringy things that he does now, nobody cared about him. He was doing the Olympian, and I'm the stand-up guy, I want to be in the Wheaties box type of thing, and nobody cared about him. And then when he started doing this whole pro wrestling, you know, the cringy thing that he does, now his name is in everyone's mouth. So I think it just depends on, you know, either you got it or you don't. You got to know how to sell yourself. Unfortunately, that's just the way of the world with social media.
Right. Yeah. And then, you know, I think it also a lot of it has to do with is that how, you know, obviously the UFC, the biggest MMA promotion in the world, controls all the rankings, all the belts. It's all essentially under one roof. Whereas boxing, I mean, like we all know, especially Mike and I, is there's like, if you look at it, there's multiple leagues, if you look at it like that, you know, and there's multiple sanctioning bodies for the world titles, the WBC, the WBO, IBF, you know, stuff like that. So they're all looked at like, all these fighters are looked at like as essentially kind of free agents. There's a lot more free agents in boxing. So all these promotions, all these promoters have, you know, it's like an actual, well, I mean, it is a sport, but it's like an actual like NBA or like baseball where you become a free agent and like, okay, who's going to give me the best sales pitch? Who's going to give me the most perks? So I think that drives the price up as well. I mean, what do you think, Mike?
No, I agree with you. The thing is, I think with, like you touched on, is the UFC always kind of keep most of their fighters down, like under their banner. There's very few that kind of get themselves like up to around the popularity of the UFC. For example, Conor McGregor, you know, like he technically could actually be bigger than the UFC because he drives all their pay-per-views. He picks and chooses when he fights. He pretty much picks his opponents. Ronda Rousey before that was somebody else who was kind of getting to that level. And it seems like sometimes, you know, Dana White will get someone to a certain level. And then when they're trying to get some kind of, you know, power, he'll stick them with somebody hard. And then they get beaten and then they drop back down again. You know, one thing I actually wanted to raise with Ed is I was listening to Frank Warren's podcast, and Dana White was on there saying that obviously he's looking at doing Zuffa boxing, and then he was supposed to make an announcement last October, but he didn't. And he said the reason is because he looked at the boxing business and decided the whole thing's a complete and utter mess. So he wants to take some time before jumping in. And I thought that was interesting because it made me think about something they posted in the New York Post about how, like you touched on before, they made $900 million. Only 150 of that actually went to pay the fighters, which is only 16% compared to the MLB, the NBA, the NFL, where the players' revenue is around 48 to 50%. And in boxing, in certain actual events, sometimes the fighters are paid out as nearly as high as 80% of the revenue that's generated for that show. So I just wanted to put that to you, Ed, and kind of like, what have you heard about that behind the scenes? Obviously, in a business standpoint, that's excellent for the UFC. But, you know, with the fighters now knowing that, and some people, you know, low down on the cards getting paid $2,000 to get kicked in the head, that it seems ludicrous.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of attempts to get the fighters to unionize. Fighters have Leslie Smith. She's probably the biggest proponent to try to get the fighters to come together. And the UFC dropped her. They got rid of her. You know, she fights for Bellator now. So, I mean, with that being said, I mean, you know, I think Randy Couture's, I mean, he's gone to DC and lobby to try to get the Ali Act extended to MMA and things like that. I mean, it's just that's as soon as Dana White said that he was going to start a boxing promotion, I was already kind of like, no, he's not. That's because, you know, why would he? Knowing that they have more to say at the bargaining table than mixed martial arts competitors. You know, and you're used to controlling fights the way that you do. I mean, but on the other hand, you got guys like Eddie Hearn commending Dana White for the way he does business, even though in the same breath he said, we can't do that in boxing because, you know, we just can't because of the Ali Act. So, I mean, there's definitely other things. I mean, fighters know. The thing is about fighters, if you've talked to enough of them, a lot of them don't even Kayla Harrison, I'm going back to her because she's the one that said it that I've actually looked at most recently. You know, a lot of them are just like, I'm not really doing this for the money. It's more for the glory and legacy and the competition of combat sports. So those are the guys that are in mixed martial arts. The money's nice, but when you hear their stories and how they came up, I mean, there's movies made about boxers that came from nothing and fought their way up. I mean, you look at the Roberto Duran movie and stuff like that. I mean, look at Rocky's whole story. Even though he's a fictional boxer, you know, it's just one of those things that it's like, I mean, it's something about training and going through the training cycle, being in camp and going to competition. The money's very nice, but they also get there's something chemical inside of their minds that rewards them, which is why it's so hard for them to retire too. You know? So, I mean, I think that's why it's hard to get them to unionize because they like what they do. I mean, look at how many fighters want to fight now and then they can't, you know. So even coaching, you can't even coach now because gyms are closed. So I actually had a question just to go back to the thing about what Broner and marketing fighters marketing themselves and getting matches. I mean, so with this event going on, there's been the media has been taking Dana White's been cursing at the media and you know, because they kind of blew inadvertently, it's stupid to even think that the media would sabotage an event because we make money off of covering these fights. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Why would we want it? Not that we all want the sport to happen, but I mean, there's that type of outlook out there. So I'm wondering, with boxing media and the thing Broner said, do you ever think that the coverage also leads to the matchmaking, as far as like what Broner said, you know, guys not being picked that should be. And the only reason I'm saying that too is because actually, Daniel, if you remember when I covered, I forget what year it was, you'll remember because you're the one that asked me to do it when we were back at page two, the Spence Algieri thing. I was sitting at Steve Cunningham's table, mm-hmm. And there was other media guys there. And he had this thing that he was talking about, a book that he's doing, a comic book or something like that. And these guys just wanted to talk to him about whatever. But I was the boxing or whatever. And I'm just like, wait a minute. That's really interesting. Like, you know, that you have, you're an artist. And we actually walked outside, Cunningham and I, walked outside and stood on 54th to talk about his book. Because it was just like, you know, like it was kind of a diss, you mm-hmm. know. So you think that. Maybe the boxing media doesn't listen to fighters enough to give them the platforms and the profiles that would get them the fights that they want.
What do you think, Mike? You go first.
I think, like we all sadly know, it's a business essentially. So it's bums on seats. It's like it is when people are coming up before they're actually guaranteed purses. It's you get a certain cut of how many tickets you sell, you know, and then eventually down the line, they get to a big enough place where, like Conor McGregor, you know, he's just a set fee and probably part of the pay-per-view. Prime example is a British fighter, Dave Allen, the heavyweight. Mm-hmm. He got huge because he played the social media realm very well. Instagram and Twitter, he had a huge following. People can relate to him because he's very, very likable. He's a funny guy. He does silly things at the weigh-in. But at the same time, he kind of shows people that, you know, he gets depressed. So people can relate to him. He's an everyday guy. Talent-wise, boxing, not that great. Maybe British level, maybe not even that, just a, like, more of a journeyman maybe. But he gets on Matchroom shows and has actually headlined a Matchroom fight card in England against Dave Price. It's because of who he is, just because he has those, I don't know, 60,000 followers or whatever he has on Instagram. So, yeah, unfortunately, you know, if you're the best boxer in the world, but you're not knocking people out, you don't have that social media following, then people aren't going to pay to see you.
Right. No, yeah. And that, you hit the nail on the head. With that analogy. And then, you know, just like we rewind back to Broner's situation, like, you know, even though Broner is technically, what is it, a four-weight champion, world champion, in four divisions. I mean, like, you can't dispute that the opponents that he beat for those titles, like, they weren't really, you know.
Two of them were vacant.
He got two vacant titles, and then the other two opponents, you know, they weren't really world class. And every time he stepped up to world class, he's got beat. But like, going back to Mike's point and Dave Allen, Broner's personality sells and makes him money. That's why he got the Pacquiao fight. Even he was coming off of a draw against Jesse Vargas, right, Mike? I think that was his last fight. He was coming off a draw against Jesse Vargas like the year before. And then he gets the Pacquiao fight, but he got the Pacquiao fight because they knew that when they put it on TV, and then I think that, I don't know if that fight was on Showtime or Fox, but, you know, they do like the whole all access 24/7 thing. Like, you know, Broner sells for ratings. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and like, it always comes back to the dollar, you know, it's the business. And even though that they knew that Broner would probably most likely get beat, which he obviously did, That's what happens. And then going back to, you know, a little bit further back with Ed's point earlier with Henry Cejudo, he was doing the Olympian thing for a while. And, you know, he was trying to be like the nice guy and be like, yeah, you know, I'm a hard worker. I can fight. And then I'm sure he saw, or his people saw, like, hey, man, like, this isn't working for you. It's not helping your brand. And then he turns the WWE persona on. And, you know, whether people hate him or they like him, they know who he is now, and they're talking about him. So it's the personality.
Yeah. Like two more MMA fighters, Chael Sonnen and Colby Covington.
Yeah.
They did the exact same thing. I mean, a lot of people, I think, you know the story about Colby Covington. He was about to be cut. UFC had actually told him, was it in UFC Brazil? You'd probably know better than me, Ed.
Yeah.
That he was going to be cut after that fight. He turned kind of like Chael Sonnen into a WWE bad guy. And now he's the interim world title holder. So
yeah, I mean, he does a bad job of it. I mean, Chael Sonnen, it's funny because I was at his last fight at the Garden, and one of the things he said in his like, you know, goodbye to the sport speech, it was that he felt like he had a hand in that aspect of creating that part for the trash talking thing in MMA. I forget how he worded it. It wasn't exactly that way, but I wrote an article over about it at SureDog.com, and it's true. Because, I mean, Chael Sonnen is actually a super nice guy, like, really nice guy. You know, he's helped fighters out that weren't able to help themselves when they were laid off for injuries for long periods of time. And only these facts only came out after the fact from the fighters, not from Chael talking about it. So I've interviewed a Bellator fighter, Jake Smith, trains at the same gym as Chael Sonnen, ATT Portland. And I've talked to him a couple of times. He's competing. Chael Sonnen has his own grappling promotion called Submission Underground, which he's been able to hold successfully during this pandemic. It's been the only live sport outside of pro wrestling that I've watched. I'm a jiu-jitsu guy, so it's entertaining for me. But Smith has Smith and another fighter, Chris Lencioni, they all train together with him. But when I asked Smith, I was like, you know, why take the fight? And risk your health and stuff like that. And he said, you know what? It's usually us asking Chael for the favor. So when he asks us for a favor, you don't ask questions. You just say yes. And I was like, I can see that being the case. And he's super nice. I mean, I've seen him at events at a lot and stuff like that. I mean, he's admittedly, he's done the American Gangster thing. So like you said, to put asses in seats. And that's, I mean, that's the thing that I was trying to look for the answer for, to see if it was in boxing, but it looks just like as media, the popular thing seems to be, and I know Daniel and I've talked about it at length in the past, the negative stuff seems to bring in more eyeballs. And sadly, that might be why, you know, that might be Broner's true gripe, you know. So like, maybe you have to be this horrible character, you know, in the public eye to get the attention so that you get your name bumped up. And it sucks that it has to be that way, because I think a lot of fighters out there, I mean, Heather Hardy got booed out of the arena in Mohegan Sun one time when she fought MMA. I wrote an article about her and Anna Houlaton, because they both came from boxing and they're fighting in MMA, and they both said, screw this, let's try this MMA. And they both tried to do all the MMA non-boxing stuff that they could during their fight, and they got booed. And I was like, why are you booing these? They're trying it. They're trying to do something. So not only did they get booed, but my article, I got a bunch of nasty messages from my article, but I thought, you know, they deserve some light too. But I mean, sadly, that just seems to be the way things are. Another thing, talking about boxing, another thing with the bare knuckle boxing, I spoke with rest in peace of the Mendez Boxing. I was at that gym when he was doing the bare knuckle promotion for bare knuckle boxing when Paulie Malignaggi was fighting Lobov. And so before the whole, you know, the thing that got attention that day was the fact that they almost fought right there in the gym. But before that happened, when Malignaggi was doing media, the media scrum, he made a lot of good points as far as, like, you know, preparation and the way media writes articles about him and boxing, this boxing versus MMA thing, which is stupid because we use all the same commissions and stuff. But, and I'm just like, okay, I wrote an article at My MMA News where I said he's making a lot of sense. And, you know, I lost, I don't know how many followers just because I wrote something positive. So it's just a weird world we live in.
What do you guys think about the pay-per-view prices after Bob Arum touched on it, saying that, you know, I think this weekend's pay-per-view card for the UFC is going to be, is it $79.99? He thinks that during this pandemic, they should, you know, half it to $40. But like we've always, you know, we've said a few times tonight, obviously it's a business. So if they half it, are they going to get double the amount of eyes?
Right. Yeah. That was his quote. I mean, we all know Bob Arum, like Ed said earlier, like Bob Arum's been alive longer than all of us. So like, you know, combined, but you know, he's known for these quotes, you know, he throws them out there. But I mean, I think, you know, he regardless, he did raise a good point by saying, is it going to double the buy rate, or more people going to tune in? Like, oh, it's $40 instead of $80. I mean, what do you think, Ed?
Well, I have a take on that is obviously not happening, because I just saw the UFC running a contest for a free pay-per-view code. So the problem with the thing is, I mean, even if they lower it to $40, they still want you to subscribe to ESPN Plus and then buy the pay-per-view. So that's a paywall, and then they want you to buy something through that paywall. If you don't listen to the podcast that I do with my West Coast buddy, Matt Hawkins, Coast to Coast Combat Hour, I'm very vocal. I can't stand the ESPN Plus era of the UFC. I won't watch their events until they come on Fight Pass, because I do like Fight Pass. I've been a Fight Pass subscriber for a long time, because of, actually, I mean, Daniel knows Eric Winter, who works with Top Rank Boxing now, but he was the president of the UFC Fight Pass branch of the UFC before Endeavor bought the company. But anyway, I'm going back to that. I mean, when you look at a guy like that, okay, look at Eric Winter and how he ran Fight Pass. If you were a Fight Pass subscriber and you bought a ticket to a UFC event, and you said on social media, hey, I'm here, he would bring you down from the rafters and sit cage side with him for the Fight Pass portion of that pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. Just because you were a subscriber.
That's sweet.
So my opinion, yeah. So, I mean, I hate that he left the UFC. But anyway, I'm saying all that to say, I would like it. I mean, I'll go one better than Bob Arum. You're putting all the early prelims. The prelims are on ESPN Red, regular ESPN. We all, the MMA community refers to it as ESPN Red because of the yellow plus for ESPN Plus. So it's going to be on ESPN Red, right?
Right.
Why don't you put the whole damn card? There's nothing on. Why not put the entire event on ESPN Red? Those that don't subscribe to Fight Pass that are surfing their channel Saturday night, and, oh, this is live? Oh, let me watch it. You'll get new fans. You'll make the ones you have happy. And then when things are back to normal, when they're looking, they'll be, hey, remember we watched that fight? When's the next one? Oh, I have to sign up for ESPN Plus. Oh, you know, I really like that. There's your selling point to get your numbers up for plus subscribers and pay-per-views. But what do I know? I'm sitting here poor in Jersey. I didn't sell anything for $4 billion. But that's my idea. That's my idea.
No, I agree with that. And then, you know, it also, I mean, what's the biggest thing that's been on in terms of sports the last couple of weeks is the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance. Yeah. It's like a 10-part series. Like every week or so, they release a new one. And that's been getting a lot of attention, obviously, because there's nothing else on in terms of sports. Mm-hmm. And I think the ratings have been, I don't know, 6-7 million people. It's been a lot of people, a lot of people. And that's not even live. It was something that was already worked on and stuff like that. But, you know, people are interested. Obviously, Michael Jordan is a big figure. But I think it obviously comes down to money because, you know, they need the money to pay the fighter and stuff like that. But I think if they spoke to the fighters on that event card and they told them like, hey, you know what? Like if we dock you, if we pay you 500 grand less or million less, depending on what it is, you know, I just throw a number out there and we put all the event on ESPN, you're going to get more, you know, maybe triple the eyeballs. And you know, maybe in the long run, we can pay you guys more for pay-per-view events or just regular events because we got more eyeballs. We got more fans. We got more people coming to the events. I mean, businesses are about risk and reward, you know, and I think that's a pretty decent risk to take, even if it doesn't pan out in the end and those fans don't stay. At least you tried it. Like, okay, well, you know, we had to try it because like that reward would be big if those fans stay. I mean, what do you think, Mike?
I agree with both of you. I mean, look at the NFL draft. Was, you know, not the usual concept, and they got something like 55 million viewers. Also at the same time, you know, if they stick it on ESPN Red, as Ed calls it, you know, you're going to get more eyes. People, you know, you can run some of the backstories of people. People could then get an affiliation with the fighters, you know, later down the line when people are back at work. They can go back to charging for pay-per-views because at the minute, you know, people are worrying about paying the mortgage, not paying $80 for something like a pay-per-view card. You know, I understand, obviously, they're probably going to need the money because there's no fans there, you know, as normal in attendance. So they're going to lose that money, all the merchandise and stuff like that gets bought. But later down the line, hopefully they'll get the fans back because you get, you know, a double, treble, quadruple eyes on these events that are going on this week. So, but it's the business.
Yeah. Sad. The greed, money, what's a... Cream,
what
like Wu Tang cream cash rules everything around. Yeah,
Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
East Coast reference in there.
but no, you're right though. I mean, like, you know, I guess we just have to see for this Saturday and how it pans out. But I mean, like, I know Ed, you guys usually do your podcast like on Mondays or Tuesdays, like around kind of the same time we do. And then you said that this week you're actually doing it later in the week. And I said, I think you said you're doing it Friday. You guys are recording Friday. And I was like, why are you going to do Friday? Friday for shows and podcasts, it sucks for traffic. And you said, well, you know, what if they cancel it, you know, like at least we have time to kind of mess with it, you know? So, and I didn't think about that. I mean, what's the likelihood that it, you know, from today, Monday, what was it, May 4th, that by this Saturday that Disney or ESPN execs like the last one come in and pull the plug?
I don't think it seems more certain. There's something about it just because it's in Florida where it's all crazy land over there. It seems like it's more certain that it will go, but I think at this point now we're more in danger of losing fights. I wrote my predictions piece. I didn't submit it yet. I usually do for the pay-per-view events. I do. I submit predictions for. I actually do it for both SureDog and MMAnews.com, and then I do a 7 takeaways editorial for MMAnews.com. And this week we're playing it safe because the card could obviously change with if there's travel issues, somebody gets sick, or whatever happens. I don't think the likelihood of it getting the plug pulled is as big as it was last time, especially since ESPN put out a statement that they're supporting this particular event. You know, that wasn't the case with the Tachi Palace, California one, because, you know, the governor of Senator Feinstein called, called the governor. The governor called Disney that owns ESPN, and that's how the plug got pulled there. So the fact that they put out that statement, you know, Dana White doesn't have anyone above him right now that looks like they're going to stop them from putting on a show.
It'll be interesting to see how many cards Florida gets over these next few years since they scratched Dana White's back and let him do the obviously the three cards there this week.
Yeah, no, that's one of the things. So when I Dr. Lucas, he said that he's like, when these smaller states that don't have the numbers as bad as we do here in Jersey and New York, you know, once they see these smaller states do things and you know, depending on what happens. I mean, there's a lot of news that came out today that there's going to be this second wave of uptick in numbers, but that's what you have to expect when you have people staying in one place this whole time. You know, it's probably going to happen. It would have happened. It happened, you know, with the seasons we have around here. You know, everybody gets sick around this time of year anyway, because for the same reason, we start going out more. So, but he said that once people see things can go by and not be so severe, since projections have been not as bad as they thought in some terms versus others, then that's what I think everyone is going to be. UFC is going to be watched more for that than the actual fights, just to see, especially the aftermath. That's what I think.
Right, right. And, you know, before we let you go here, Ed, I wanted to lastly touch on you know, Eddie Hearn's been talking about kind of mentioning playing around with making a Matchroom MMA. I mean, Mike, I know that there was like some details or kind of maybe he just talked about it. I mean, can you dive in a little bit more into that, Mike?
Yeah, he has a few fighters. For example, someone from actually Ed's back garden is Reshet Matty, who's, you know, skilled in, I think, in jiu-jitsu, kickboxing and all those sorts of things. And you know, I think Eddie Hearn spoke about having him on the card. Also, Logan Paul, because of his wrestling background, boxing, and probably because he's got a very big social media following. That could be one of the reasons they want Logan Paul on there.
Yeah.
Just a guess. So, you know, I think he was talking about maybe just doing a one-off type of thing, because I think, you know, the UFC and, you know, one championship is so big around the world that I think Matchroom would be fighting a losing battle, same as Golden Boy when they decided to go into the MMA world.
Yeah, I actually wrote about that over at MMAnews.com, because obviously with the mix with him talking interested in MMA, when someone from boxing wants to try to promote, a boxing promoter wants to, I feel like Eddie Hearn, if any boxing promoter wanted to make that move and be successful, I definitely think Eddie Hearn could do it. I actually think Matchroom MMA has a nice ring to it. like you said, I mean, he's obviously, if he does it, he's going to do a test. Like, he's going to do it the same way he did KSI and Logan Paul. It's going to be like a YouTube thing. It won't be something, you know, too risky. It'll be like something where they can make more profit through advertising, through streams, where people can get access to it and stuff. I don't see him trying to pull subscribers out of it or doing a pay-per-view model for something like that if he does try it. But he also said, I forget, I don't know if it was in that same Instagram live that he did with Logan Paul, or another interview he did, I cited it over at MMAnews.com, but he did say if he does go make the attempt, he wants to do it to compete with the UFC. He doesn't want to do it half-assedly, for lack of a better term, like De La Hoya did. I mean, De La Hoya did a piss-poor job. I know he said something today. I know he said something today that he it was some sort of win for him, but no. If you don't know the fighters' names on your own card, then and he ignored me for media. Like, I was trying to get interviews and stuff, and I was just like, dude, No, they're guys that I sent emails out and they didn't respond. Mm-hmm. And I was like, listen, I'm trying to get eyeballs on your thing. If you don't want it, then I guess, you know, I think I was a Fight affiliate, but it was on Fight TV and I was an affiliate too. And I was just like, listen, if you guys don't want the business, then I'm not trying to give it to you.
That was on Brian Campbell's podcast.
Which one?
Oscar De La Hoya, where he said that fight was successful, very successful.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Successful, yeah, yeah, successful in losing money, right?
Yeah, no, it was awful. I think in the ESPN 30 for 30, the Liddell Ortiz, they close it with that and those numbers on how bad that it did. And it's just like, I mean, not for nothing. That's really bad. I mean, it's disrespectful to the guys that were there. I'll tell you what, the biggest success out of that whole card was Deron Wynn fought on that card. And that was the spotlight he needed to get signed to the UFC. So if anything good came out of that, you know, for that, I mean, outside of feeling bad for Chuck Liddell losing in the fashion that he did. And I mean, whatever. Tito Ortiz, I don't want anything. The guy's been in the sport long enough, so I'm not going to badmouth him. I used to be a big fan of his, so before he went crazy or whatever.
Actually, I would, Ed. Did you make picks for the fights you said this weekend?
Oh yeah, I mean, if you want, I'll leak those to you right now. I haven't submitted them yet, but I'll
leak them.
I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. My brother actually put some bets on today. He lives obviously back in the UK, so it's all legal. Well,
I mean, I got to give you a disclaimer if you're going to use them for bet. If you're going to use it for betting purposes, I used to have a really high pick rate. This was 2019, though.
Correct. Correct picks are just
yeah. No. Like correct picks. I didn't close out. I'm early 2019. I didn't close out 2019 with my. I was like 64%. I used Tapology to track my stuff. Like for every event, but I was 64%. I've dropped significantly. I think Sure Dog has me at 50 something. I'm at the bottom. I was like number two or three on Sure Dog's list, and now I'm like at the bottom because we put up our picks every fight night, and with a nice graphic and everything. I'm trying to bring up the draft now so I can so I can tell you.
He's gonna give us the leaks. Mike's a little bit. You know, he's a bigger MMA fan than I am. You know, I follow it. And so obviously, it helps. It's like Ed and I, you know, for our listeners, like, you know, he's become more of a boxing fan in the last few years ever since because of me. And I've become more of an MMA fan because of him last few years.
Well, we could get it. We could go. I mean, I've told you the story. I was always a boxing fan. I'm Mexican.
Right.
Like,
right.
I can't not. I've grown up and watched boxing. You know what I mean? So it's a long story, but I strayed away from boxing when something happened in the heavyweight division a long time ago. I told it's when Lennox Lewis wouldn't take the rematch against Klitschko and then the belts got split all over. I was like, I'm done with this sport. It just put a bad taste in my mouth, but I forget what year that was, but that's when I kind of started straying away from boxing. All right. So what do you want first? Main card or? The main event, or I'll give you the main event, my main event pick. I mean, here's why you shouldn't listen to me because I never bet against Justin Gaethje. I've followed Justin Gaethje's career all the way from when he fought his way to the title in World Series of Fighting until he got to the UFC. And Justin Gaethje has won me money every single time I bet on him. Mm-hmm. So I actually, even short notice, here's a quote from Justin Gaethje. It's not in my article, but here's a quote from Justin Gaethje when he was talking about fighting Tony Ferguson on short notice. I won't respect him if he doesn't try to kill me. Mm. That's what Justin Gaethje said.
Wow.
So when you think about Justin Gaethje, anyone that fights Justin Gaethje, it's super dangerous because even if they win afterwards, they're not the same fighter. It's if you go back to the first Rocky when Apollo's in the books picking opponents to make a show fight and his trainer pulls him aside and is like, you don't want this guy. That's Justin Gaethje. You don't want that guy. I'm not going to be surprised if Justin Gaethje does something to damage Tony Ferguson to the point that he gets a TKO victory.
Wow.
Only because Justin Gaethje, outside of him being a decent wrestler, his leg kicks are, he beat Edson Barbosa in the leg kick battle. Ferguson had a leg issue where he had surgery that he was out for a while when they stripped him of the interim title. So if Gaethje always attacks his legs, and if his legs kicks are as bad as everyone says they are, there's a chance that Ferguson's going to feel that. I know he does the traditional bone conditioning and stuff like that, but he's also the older fighter too. So
you know, I know this is a boxing show, but why do they never bring up and really talk about Ferguson's issues outside of the octagon? I find that very weird, because in boxing they'd be all over that, and obviously, you know, I know he's had issue with, you know, domestic violence. Also, his family called the police because they were scared, because he was making some, you know, crazy remarks about hearing voices. But no one ever brings that up before this fight.
Well, I mean, someone tried to bring it up during the media event, and Tony Ferguson told the guy to go F himself. So I guess he just doesn't talk about it. I know he went to therapy and he got cleared of whatever. I mean, that stuff, that got really dark. I mean, if we're going to mention it, it got really dark. He was talking about listening devices being implanted in his legs and people in the walls and stuff. It was pretty bad, but I mean, it is what it is. I mean, remember, the go-to meme for MMA fans is the Just Bleed guy from the UFC. So I mean, it's a sad image for the sport, but it is what it is. All right. I actually have Henry Cejudo picked for the co-main event, just because, you know, he's been fighting more frequently than Dominic Cruz. Francis Ngannou is my pick for against Jarenzina Rosenstruik.
That'll be a beast of a fight.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, he actually, Rosenstruik doesn't have any, like, he's all knockouts. Ngannou actually has 2 submission wins on his record, so that's why I picked him. I think he's just got the higher caliber experience for the fight. And then the Stevens-Kattar fight, Jeremy Stevens versus Calvin Kattar. I picked Calvin Kattar only because he's won more by decision, and that's how Stevens usually loses. Even though Jeremy Stevens has more knockouts, like he has a really good chance of knocking him out, but I picked Calvin Kattar. And then, oddly enough, the opener, they flopped it. Greg Hardy and Jorgen De Castro are opening up the main card. And I picked Jorgen De Castro because he knocked folks out walking backwards. And you know, Hardy being new to MMA, they're both kind of new to MMA, but Hardy likes to come forward a lot. And because he comes from football, I guess, he comes forward with his power. And that seems to be right up De Castro's alley. But those are my main card picks for the pay-per-view portion.
Did you back Cerrone?
They only asked me for main card picks, but it's hard for me to back Cerrone. I think he needs to take some more time off, to be honest with you. Although he said, you know, he said that he likes being short notice. He's more excited about this fight than when he fought Connor. But I mean, the thing about the anywhere, anytime, when you're his age, maybe you need to just pick the fights after you've rested a while. And I don't think he's taken, I was hoping to see him in July, not this soon.
Right.
So it's hard. I got Pettis in that one.
Man. Yeah. Man. Well, guys, you know, I think we've had a pretty informative discussion for our listeners. You know, I think there's a lot of things that we said that we touched on that, you know, combat sports fans in general, boxing, MMA fans are thinking about. You know, what's going to happen, especially with the UFC event this weekend. Is that going to definitely open the door for like a Top Rank, a Matchroom, a Golden Boy Promotions, PBC to start scheduling their events? Be like, oh, okay, you know. So I think this is very informative for people. And it was good for us to talk, to go back and forth with everything, especially because we're all in the media game here for each respective sport. So it's pretty good. You know, it's a nice change of pace, at least for me, to talk to you, Ed, because like, you know, you know the media game. You know, obviously we each get guests, fighters, you know, personalities on our shows, and you know, we interview them, but I feel like this was more of like a discussion for all of us, you know, talking about, you know, the state of each sport and what's going to happen. So Mike, go ahead and tell our listeners where they can follow us.
At The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And you can also catch us on the Boxing Social YouTube page.
Ed, go ahead and plug your stuff.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Carbazel. It's on the bottom here. I write mymmanews.com, mmanews.com. I also write boxing there for you boxing guys. SureDog.com. And 137pm.com. And also have the Coast to Coast Combat Hour podcast We'll be going live on YouTube Friday night. We're supposed to have a fighter on too, Shamir Peshewa, who fights over at Valor Fights. She's got some stuff she wants to plug. She's going to do the main card predictions or her picks with us.
Nice. Well, Ed, I'm sure we'll have you on again in the future. Hopefully it's not during another pandemic, but you know, we're always here if you need a resident boxing guy for your guys' show as well. But, you know, for my co-host, Michael Shepherd, for Car Basil, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.